You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. It's kind of crazy out there. If we have any WDIY listeners out there, the roads are crazy. I don't know if people are going into panic mode or what. It was the longest line I've ever seen coming over the Hill to Hill Bridge, and then parking in the area is crazy. I guess people are honoring the emergency and not the snow emergency declared in the city of Bethlehem at 7 o'clock. I heard Jeff mentioning it earlier, and you have 4 hours from 7 o'clock to move your car. But it almost made me late for the show because I couldn't find a spot. But folks, hopefully you're listening in your car and you're going to listen to a great show tonight. And I'm going to give you something to do while you're snowed in. And what we're going to give you to do is get your taxes organized. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Just want to mention, this is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP. That's an accredited estate planner, as well as a certified financial planner practitioner. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org. And if you're outside our listening area, have friends outside our listening area, please mention wdiy.org. You can go on anytime, listen to old podcasts for various programs. It's a great benefit, great website, and if you're not currently a member, you can certainly find information about becoming a member. With that, you get email updates of what some of the programming is, and in particular, the local programming that we do here on WDIY. Lots of good information, educating folks, etc. Today's February 12, 2014. The markets were, you know, pretty flat today. The Dow closing at 15,963, the NASDAQ at 4201, and the S&P at 1819. Last week, we discussed annuities with the author of Annuities for Dummies, Kerry Pector. It was very nice having him. I really appreciated his time and his commitment to this subject. He's a journalist and has brought a lot of information and a new way of looking at annuities. So I appreciated him being here. And that show, I believe, is probably available on WDIY.org if you would like to listen to that. He did give us a new perspective, so I really appreciate that. Tonight, we're discussing getting ready to do those tax returns. We are live. We are here to take your questions. And the show is a lot more fun when I do answer questions. If you have any, you can call in and talk on air or off air. If you're not comfortable talking off air, you can give your questions to Judy Ann. She's here in the studio with me this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics, not specific investments. And while we do typically try to have a topic each week, you can ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And that's pretty easy to remember that end part because it's 88.1 on the listening dial for most of our listening area. 93.7 is also another station I listen on. So 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So what do we need to know about taxes? That's what we're going to talk about. So what I would love to do is kind of give folks some ideas, kind of help you get your arms around getting ready. It's at the end of the show, I always say be proactive, not reactive. I also say, why not do it today rather than tomorrow? And this is coming from a true procrastinator herself. And so I don't want you guys procrastinating because then we're kind of, it's just lots of extra stress. So I am committed this year to stopping the procrastinating. I'm trying to set goals every morning, say, I want to say at the end of the day, I accomplished A, B, C. So I start my day saying, okay, let me get A done, let me get B done, let me get C done. Sometimes I'm not always successful with that, and I like helping people, and I let myself get interrupted. So you kind of have to find ways to stop sabotaging yourself. And in particular, let's talk about taxes. I know it's stressful for a lot of folks. This is about easing that stress, making it a little bit more manageable, giving you a little bit more control over what you're doing and understanding it. So if you have questions, again, the number is 610-758-8810. So let's give some general information. Filing season has already opened with the IRS. There was a bit of a delay, but you certainly can start filing tax returns as of January 31st. I already feel like it's going much smoother than last year. More of the forms are ready. Last year, there was tax changes at the last second in January. So, the IRS was behind. Software developers were behind. So we didn't have that as much this year. So just having the forms ready is a big a step toward having a smoother tax season and helping you get your tax returns done a little bit quicker. We still have some delays in certain reporting, though, so I want to go over that. I also want to share some tax tips that you may have missed for 2013 that we don't want you to miss for 2014. So let a lesson from 2013 help you in 2014. I'm going to talk to you about some of those things. So the first thing we obviously have to do is start gathering up your information. So when we talk about gathering up your information, we are talking about tax documents. If you work, that's called your W-2, and the easy way to remember that is wages. A lot of times people will say, oh, I have to bring in my W-4. No, it's your W-2 that's your wage reporting. Your W-4 is the form you fill out with your employer, usually when you first start working, to say what your filing status is and how many dependents or exemptions you're going to claim on your tax return so that your employer knows how much federal income tax to withhold from your pay. So your W-2 is your wages. W-4 is your withholding and filing status. Why it's important for you to know about your W-4 is because if you're return, your tax return, you file your tax return and something goes awry and you owe thousands and thousands of dollars because you under withheld for the amount of money that you make, it's important for you to know that you can go in and change your exemptions or filing status or your W-4 to tell your employer to even withhold more tax if you're not withholding enough. So it's important to know difference between W-2, W-4, your W-4, you can change the withholdings. Why wouldn't your employer withhold the right amount of money? Well, you could say, I'm married, I have two kids, and they withhold X amount of dollars in federal tax from your wages. And then you go to file your tax return, you're married, you go to file your tax return, you guys still owe tons of money and you can't figure it out. You're married, you're filing joint, you have two exemptions. Why doesn't it work right? Well, for one thing, when you bring in earnings of more than one person or more than one job, you have two jobs maybe, you have two people working, that income goes up and then your employer is only basing the withholdings on the income that they know about. They might not know about your spouse or your spouse's earnings or your second job, etc. So that's why sometimes people kind of get mixed up and aren't withholding proper amounts. So you want to make sure when you're looking at the kind of taxes that you have to pay, that you're factoring in all that income. It could also be that you have investment income. Maybe you have interest, dividends. Maybe you have capital gains. You sold some, investments. Maybe you have some rental income. Maybe you have losses. Maybe you have rental losses. Maybe you have big itemized deductions, and we're going to talk about some of the things to look for itemizing and getting deductions that might help offset some of that income. So maybe your employer's over withholding because maybe you have losses or deductions that also your employer doesn't know about. So you might want to adjust your W-4 to have them withhold less so that then you have more money during the year to pay bills and things like that. That's especially important if you're someone who gets a huge refund, but you know, you have huge credit card debt. So you want to try to match up your spending and taking care of your responsibilities as you go throughout the year. Give yourself more money in your paycheck. If you have questions about taxes, you're welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about income taxes tonight. If you have questions, you can either call in live on air or give your question to Judy Ann. She's answering the calls tonight. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. It would be a great idea to work on income taxes this, I guess it's not this weekend, it's tomorrow. Thursday is not quite the weekend, but I imagine if we do get this 8 to 12 inches, a lot of us are going to be in our homes and maybe not able to remote into work, and you might need something to do. And rather than watching television, now that you have found this time, it could be a great time to start kind of organizing your tax information. And hopefully, if you've listened to prior shows, you've learned about setting up file system, whatever file system works for you, whether it's an electronic file system or a folder system. You've already organized all your documents. Now you have to pull them out. For me, the easiest things for people to do is gather up those tax reporting documents that come to us automatically. That is the easiest thing to do. And then you feel like you've accomplished something. That is those W-2s, 1099-Rs. That is for people think R retirement, even though it's not just that, but think that's how I think about it. 1099-R is for people who get maybe distributions from annuities or retirement accounts, IRAs, pensions, that type of thing. 1099-Rs, your Social Security statements. Some folks, Social Security sends what I'll call like a 1099, okay, with the tax information. It shows what you paid in Medicare tax, and it usually has some color to it. They also send very close to the same time another statement that is just like white paper. And that tells you what your benefit is for the upcoming year. Quite often, I'll have folks bring in that statement of benefits for the upcoming year. That is not telling me what you got paid last year. So you want to make sure you have the correct Social Security statement when you're either doing your own taxes or having a tax preparer do it. Some folks, if you only have Social Security, you might not have to file a tax return. So you also want to make sure whether your income is high enough that you have to file a tax return. Sometimes the IRS will send you a letter saying, you know what, you really don't have to file anymore. So you want to pay attention to things like that, kind of make your life a little bit easier. 1099 INTs, that is from interest, if anyone's getting that, interest from bank accounts, and those should have already been issued. They would have gone out January 31st, so you'd have those. Here's the little stinker that we're having, and that is 1099 DIV, 1099 DIVs, and usually with that, a 1099 B for brokerage sales when you're selling investments. Quite often, if you work with a financial advisor or you work with a brokerage company or a discount brokerage firm, you're going to get something called a consolidated 1099, where maybe you have some interest income with them, maybe you have some dividend income, and maybe you have some sale proceeds. That consolidated 1099 may be delayed because many, many custodians have taken advantage of late filing of those documents, because if more people have mutual funds and if the mutual fund managers are buying and selling during the year, sometimes it takes them some time at the end of the year to kind of reconcile all those buys and sells, to know what kinds of distributions they might have for capital gain distribution. Sometimes they need reclassification. Sometimes there's reclassification of, you know, master limited partnerships, different things like that that you might have within your brokerage statement. So rather than for several years, what we saw happening were 1099 divs getting issued, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, we'd get a corrected one, and maybe the tax return was already filed. So rather than folks filing with a regular 1099 and then getting a corrected 1099 2 weeks later, I believe someone, you know, went to the IRS, said, hey, can we have a little bit more time in filing these? They gave them that time, and now everyone's taking advantage of that. So quite often, we're waiting quite a while to get those 1099 DIV statements. We've been hearing from a lot of the custodians that they're going to be issued by like February 15th, but sometimes it rolls out in phases. So we might have had someone or some already issued January 31st, some February 7th, some February 10th, some February 15th. So you're going to see those 1099 divs starting to come. So don't wait for that to say, you know, I'm just going to wait till I have everything together. You can start getting your information together now and getting it organized. The more organized you are, especially if you're paying someone to help you, the cheaper your preparation will be, because then you're not paying someone to organize you. You know what you have better than anybody else. So I've mentioned W-2s, 1099-Rs, Social Security statements, 1099-INTs, 1099-DIVs. Another delay is coming in K-1s. Typically, if you have someone who's invested in like a master limited partnership, a lot of folks were going into these because of the gas and oil and development and all of that. Maybe you're a shareholder in an S-Corp or a partner in a partnership, or you're a beneficiary of a trust or an estate. Sometimes those K-1s get delayed, and partnerships aren't even required to get those out until March 15th. So you may be waiting for things like K-1s. As far as organizing your information, though, again, these are documents that folks are required to give you if you've made money or have had reportable transactions. Those same documents that and information that they report to you, they're also reporting it to the IRS. So you really, really have to be careful and make sure that whatever transactions you've had over the year, that you have the backup documents for that. If you've sold something, maybe you had, you know, some stock that you held and you went through a transfer agent and you sold it in February. And with your check, they issued with the pay stub, they sent you your check, gave you the pay stub, and attached to that was a 1099-B. Sometimes that happens. They might issue it when they, you know, pay you. Well, or even dividends. Sometimes at the bottom of a dividend check, if it's the last quarter, they'll send the 1099-DIV attached to the check. You want to make sure you're paying attention to that. Always on the outside of an envelope, these payors are required to put important tax information enclosed. It's required. So you really want to make sure you capture all of that information, those envelopes, at any time they come in during the year, because that is going to be a matching program with the IRS. If you don't report it and the IRS has that information because the payor told them, the IRS, that they were paying you that money, that is one of the flags for an IRS audit letter. They will say, hey, you know, custodian ABC, brokerage house ABC, said that you sold $100,000 of something and you didn't report it. And then they're going to say you owe taxes of $25,000. And you're going to go, what? That's crazy. I sold that for $100,000, but I paid $120,000 for it. I had a $20,000 loss. I didn't think I had to report anything. Well, the IRS doesn't know how much you paid for it necessarily. That's changing. But it could be a case where the IRS doesn't have your cost basis. They only know what your sale proceeds were. They're going to send you a letter. Same thing with dividends. So you want to definitely make sure that you're getting all of those documents. When I come back from this next break, I'm going to talk about the things that aren't on tax documents that the IRS doesn't know about, that you have to have the backup and records for in what you're reporting and putting on the tax return. If you have questions, the number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. What we're talking about tonight is income taxes. And there were a lot of folks out on the roads tonight. I don't know if you're all going shopping, buying groceries. Again, about being proactive, not reactive. My husband did shopping last night because he was suspicious that we could have this big snowstorm. I'm still hoping it all kind of blows over. So if you are going to be stuck in the house, what better thing to do than to get ready for your income taxes? So we're going to talk a little bit tonight about, you know, gathering up those documents. I just went over the litany of some of the tax reporting that goes on between payors and the IRS, and then how the IRS expects you to also report that information on your returns, and there is a matching program, and they'll send you a letter if it doesn't match. A caution here, when I have folks who get letters from the IRS, really, it doesn't mean they're always right. So you have to be really careful. If you get a letter from the IRS and it says you owe, you know, $3,000, don't be in a panic and write a check and send it in and then later think about, yeah, I got a letter from the IRS. They said I owed $3,000 and I had to pay that. You know, they could be wrong. So you want to make sure that you look very carefully at what they're saying or why they are saying something. Typically, we'll see a letter that will say, here are your numbers, here are the numbers that we have, and here is how we adjusted it. But I have actually seen a letter where they just kind of say, here you owe this money. And it's like, how did this happen? Just recently, I was really, really surprised by this letter that a client got that just made no sense to me, and they offered no explanation. So we have been going back and forth with the IRS to determine why the client got that letter with no explanation. And, you know, so just be careful. Just be careful. It doesn't always mean you owe. Folks, if you have questions this evening, I don't know if anyone's calling right now. Judy Ann had to run out and move her car. But if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Questions can also come through yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can email your questions and we'll do our best to get to those as well. So we talked about some of the important tax documents that you know you're getting. They say important tax information enclosed on the outside of the envelope. Hopefully you've kept those all away in folders. The other thing you need to make sure that you're tracking and keeping good records for are certain deductions that you may take, or if you have rental property or you have business expenses. So let's start with Schedule A, because that's probably one of the most typical deduction advantages that people take, deductions that people may take advantage of. The IRS gives everyone a standard deduction. But if you're, and it depends on if you're married or not, and if you're over 65 or not. So there's a standard deduction. And a lot of people will say to me, well, Lori, how do I know, you know, if I'm going to be over the standard deduction? Well, sometimes you don't know. So I try to tell people to kind of keep track of what's going on in their life during the year that might be deductible as an itemized deduction, Schedule A itemized deduction, because you never know if that might be, you know, the year that you're going to itemize. And I'll give you an example. I have a client who has filed, she's single, has filed with a standard deduction year after year after year. And I always ask the same questions. And sometimes people say, Lori, nothing's changed. Okay. So, but I love asking questions because I just do. Anyway, so single person, standard deduction, $6,100. And if you're over 65, you get a little bit more than that. So $6,100, single person. Well, we're talking. I call her. You say, yep, we've done the standard deduction every year. Did you have anything unusual this year in medical expenses? Oh, I don't know, but I don't really need to keep track of that. I don't normally get that. I said, yes, but have you had anything unusual? Really, you know, something that you haven't normally had? Well, I did have some big dental bills. I said, okay, what was it? $5,000, she said. I said, $5,000, that sounds like a lot when I add it to your real estate taxes and your charitable giving. I think we might get over your $6,100 standard deduction. Would you mind taking a little time and go checking on your medical expenses? And so she did, and she called me back, and she didn't have $5,000 in dental expenses. She had $7,000 in dental expenses. So when I added the $7,000 to the real estate taxes and charitable giving, she went from owing $26 to having a refund of $1,300. So you want to make sure that you are keeping track of your medical expenses during the year if you think you may be able to itemize. Now, a little hint around that is quite often what I see is people, usually when they retire and their income level drops and their medical expenses go up, you are the prime person to possibly be eligible for itemizing when in the past you may not have been. So keep that in mind. And when you have unusually large expenses that aren't covered by insurance, a lot of times dental work, you know, there's like little caps they'll cover, but not everything. What else? Medical expenses, your real estate taxes. We still get a deduction for sales tax. So usually if you're someone who works and you have wages, we get a deduction for state and local income taxes on Schedule A. If you're not working, a lot of times that's one of your biggest deductions. So if all of a sudden you're not working, maybe you're not itemizing anymore because that big deduction you had when you were working no longer exists. Well, we still have something called the sales tax deduction. That may be going away. They may extend it. I don't know. But pay attention. If in 2013 you might have had the sales tax deduction, did you buy any new cars in 2013? Because we can add the sales tax to your general sales tax deduction, and that might be enough, along with maybe some medical expenses, real estate taxes, maybe you have some mortgage interest, that could maybe pop up your itemized deductions. Sometimes folks won't have a mortgage, and then maybe when they retire, because they paid off their house, then they retire, and maybe they decide to build an addition, do some improvements on the house. They might take out a home equity loan. All of a sudden, we have some mortgage interest again. It's called home equity, but that could be a deduction that might throw your itemizing up into benefiting you more than your standard deduction. One thing you want to make sure, though, is you're keeping your records. So things like real estate taxes, that's not reported to the IRS. You're going to want to make sure you look at your real estate tax bills and you're taking the deduction for the actual tax paid, not for penalties and interest and things like that. Mortgages do get paid. Mortgage interest does get reported to the IRS. You want to make sure you've captured that. What I want to mention about mortgages is quite often, sometimes folks will refinance and they might go from one bank to another bank. Sometimes you stay at the same bank, but sometimes you go from one bank to the other bank and you forget. I'm with ABC Bank in January and then I switch to XYZ Bank in February and I get my 1098 from XYZ Bank, but maybe it was under like $600 for ABC Bank. They may not have reported it to you. You've got to remember, if you refinance, there could be important information on your refi statement, but you also don't want to miss one of the mortgage deductions. I've had people miss it, and I'm the one who caught it. So just be careful and trace those things. When we come back from our next break, we're going to talk a little bit about charitable giving and looking at what you're allowed to do for that. And then I also want to mention, before we go to break, Neil Heaver, our operations director here, says, due to the snow emergency, they will start clearing the streets right at 7 p.m. So just be careful out there when you are looking for places to park, etc. And I think I'm going to have to get out of here right at 7 as well. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about income taxes. I am a CPA and a CFP and an AEP. For more information, yourfinancialchoices.com. And if you have questions and you'd like to email those, that is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen to prior podcasts on WDIY.org, or if you're outside our listening area or have friends or family who might be interested in our programming here, you can tell them they can listen online at WDIY.org. So we are talking about income taxes. If you have questions, don't wait till the end of the show. I'm like on like high power speed, if anybody's noticed. I'm like, I'm trying to get all this stuff in. I sense the pressure of the snow coming, and I want to make sure that folks have some information that can help them move forward and work on getting your income taxes done. And in particular, if you have some question that's hanging you up, I'd be happy to see if I can take a stab at it. The number is 610-758-8810, and you can either talk live on air or just give your question to Judy Ann off air, and she will bring that in to me in the studio. So in our little litany here, we have gathered all of our tax documents. We have looked at some of the items that we could use as deductions that are not reported necessarily to the IRS, things like real estate taxes, sales tax, also things like charitable giving. You have to make sure it's not like in the old days, you know, people would walk in and say, oh, yeah, I think I gave $3,000 to the church. That doesn't work. We've always had to have receipts or canceled checks or documentation from the charity that we've given money. And the IRS is much stricter on that now. So you definitely want to make sure that you have the backup for your charitable contributions. If you're giving cash in church and you're putting it in an envelope with your little number and name on it, and the church is tracking that for you, they will give you a printout at the end of the year saying, here's how much money you gave. That's documentation. If you have canceled checks, that's documentation. If it's over $250, the charity is required to send you a letter acknowledging that you had not received any, you know, services or property or whatever for that donation. So definitely make sure that you have the backup for your charitable contributions. If you give more than a certain dollar amount in appreciated stock, there's a special form called the Form 8283. You need to disclose what you gave, what shares, what company, what cost basis, what's the fair market value, and you definitely should get a receipt from the charity on that. If you do things like clothing donations, if it's under $500, you don't need that extra extra reporting on the tax return, but you still need those receipts and slips and things like that in your backup for your return in case you're ever audited. If you give more than $500, you also have to report those kinds of donations on the Form 8283. Pay attention when you're thinking about your tax return that you don't get caught up in the mode of, you know, same as last year, same as last year, same as last year. You want to make sure that you kind of thoughtfully consider your circumstances each year anew. You want to ask yourself, you know, did your marital status change? That impacts your income tax. What about dependents? Did you remember to put the new baby on? Or maybe you're divorced and you have kids and there's you know, multiple parties involved in supporting those children, who actually gets to claim that child as a dependent? There's certain rules that you can work with each other on knowing who's going to claim the child, or there's tiebreaker rules, there's custodial rules, all kinds of different rules on who gets to take the dependent. But the funny thing is the IRS also doesn't know that necessarily. And sometimes it's like first come, first serve. So if you are one parent who's fighting with the other parent, and maybe you're not married and, you know, or you're divorced or whatever, and you say, I'm going to take the child, and the other parent says, I'm going to take the child. Well, if you file the tax return first, the IRS might process it that way. And then that second parent tries to take the child as well, and their tax return gets bounced. And all of a sudden, guess what? That person's having to prove whether or not they actually were entitled to take the child. It gets very, very messy. I highly recommend that the parties involved with children work together, talk about it with each other, be smart about this. It's beneficial for both parties to say, how is this going to work? If we technically would both be entitled to taking a child, and we can work it out. The IRS is pretty good about that. It goes to tiebreaker rules if you're not working together on it. So you want to make sure what's best for the family. And if one is going to save a lot of money and the other one doesn't get any benefit from that, then why can't the parties talk with each other, say, let's work this out, and it could be more beneficial for the child. And if you're saving money by doing it, you know, take those savings and put it into a college savings plan for that child. And then that's an extra benefit as well. So you want to kind of go through some of these questions before you're stuck at the last minute and you're not being proactive anymore. Now you're just stuck and you're fighting and it's complicated and it costs more money. So just be careful of that. We had a question come in from Bill. 2 years ago, he did not pay a credit card bill. It has since been written off by the credit card company. Is that amount something he needs to include on his return as some type of income? He is not sure how to handle credit card company says they are submitting to the IRS. Bill, that's a great question, because we have also seen that happen more often lately, and that is called cancellation of debt. And yes, the credit card company may end up reporting that to the IRS, and it's on a particular form. I think it is a 1099-C. I'm going to quickly try to see if I can look that up for you. I have a handy-dandy guide here. But whether or not it's taxable to you, it kind of depends. One way, initially, you have to assume that it would be taxable to you. But one of the ways you can get out of it is if you are insolvent. And there is actually a worksheet you can find. Well, I have one handy, but I don't know where we found it. But there's an insolvency worksheet that you can go through where you look at the time of the cancellation of debt and you add up all of your assets and you add up all of your debts. And if your debts exceed your assets in this amount of the canceled debt, then you're insolvent and it wouldn't be taxable. But you would have to demonstrate that. I would keep a record of that worksheet and what it looked like. So cancellation of debt, it is a personal liability. It's a loan forgiven, so they deem that to be income. And we do suggest that you look through that a worksheet to see if you are insolvent. So I do believe it is a 1099-C cancellation of debt. So a lender that cancels part of that debt must file the form 1099-C, and then the IRS would look for that information on the front page of the tax return under other income. So let's pretend it was $2,000, Bill. If you can show that you were insolvent by more than $2,000, then you would say it's excluded by reason of the insolvency. And I do believe there's a form that you could that you use to show that insolvency as well. Okay, so I hope that helped. The phone number, folks, if you have questions this evening, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're going over income taxes and trying to help you get your tax return done. And in Bill's case, for example, it's nice that if you kind of have this information, you can move forward because maybe, you know, you're nervous about it. You don't know what to do. You don't know if you should report it. And now maybe you have an answer. If you end up being insolvent, it might not be reportable, or maybe it's not as much as the impact might not be as much as you might have thought. I would move forward, run the numbers, see what they look like, and see how it works out. Sometimes when you add the cancellation of debt to your tax return, you still might have other deductions or exemptions or standard deduction that will offset it anyway. So it might not be as significant as you might be worried about. So definitely look at the numbers. Phone number 610-758-8810. So some of the other questions you might want to ask yourself, I went over, you know, marital status, dependents, education. Did you have any education? Did your kids have any education? There are still a lot of great education credits out there for people. And how do you get them? The education credits will follow the student and who gets to claim them as a dependent. So if the parent has a child who's in school, that child is your dependent, and you've paid tuition out of pocket, and your income is below a certain amount, you may qualify for some really great education credits. If your child is in the first 4 years of college, there's something called the American Opportunity Credit. If you're married, filing joint, and you make less than $160,000 on page one, basically, it's a great credit. It's up to like $2,500. We know that's been extended through 2016. So you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of that if it's available to you. If your income is over $180,000, then you kind of lose out on that. For folks, you might say, I am not a four-year degree candidate. I'm a graduate student. Well, there's other education credits for graduate students as well. There's something called the lifetime learning credit that could be for someone who's getting a graduate degree. It could be for, you know, an adult getting certain education requirements. There's lots of requirements around these, so you'd want to make sure you understand them. The main thing you have to know is if you yourself are getting education, a spouse is getting education, a child is getting education, you want to make sure that you're investigating some of these education credits that are available. There's lifetime learning credit. There's the American Opportunity Credit. There's the tuition and fees deduction. There's the student loan interest deduction, education savings bond interest exclusion. What you can't do is use the tuition that you've paid for all of these at once. There's a coordination of benefits. So if you think you're going to qualify for all, you know, three different ones, you may only be able to use the tuition for one of the credits. There's also something called a 529 plan. If you take money, a distribution out of a 529 account, the earnings and growth on that account that you also withdraw at that time of distribution may not be subject to income tax if you have qualified education expenses, corresponding qualified education expenses. So one of the things you could do is maybe you have a tuition of $10,000 and you have room and board of $10,000. You could take $10,000 out of the 529 plan and not pay any income tax on it because you have qualified education expenses of room and board. And you could take the $10,000 that you paid for tuition and use that amount paid toward one of these other education credits like the American Opportunity Credit. All right, so just coordinate those benefits. Make sure you're aware of them. A lot of folks are trying to get their tax returns ready and done so that they can fill out the FAFSA form, the free application for federal student aid. That's up. That's ready. That's FAFSA. I think it's FAFSA.gov or org. FAFSA.gov. I think it's FAFSA.gov. So for folks who are ready to do their FAFSA, you got to be very careful about that last three-letter extension, though, because you don't want to end up on a site that's not the actual FAFSA application. So for folks who are going to be eligible for that, you definitely want to get your tax return done so you can get that filed, because that could make an impact on your child's ability to get financial aid for the fall, in particular for private schools that may have, you know, grants or aid available, and it might be a first come, first serve type of a benefit that they may get. So you definitely want to make sure that you're getting that done. And that website, thank you, Jeff, is FAFSA, F-A-F-S-A, that's Fred, Apple, Fred, Sally, Apple, .ed.gov, FAFSA.ed.gov. So make sure you're getting your tax return ready for that as well. When we come back, we'll continue the last part of our show. The phone number is 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. The time now is 6:47. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you better hurry up and get them in now. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We are working up to the end of the show here. I'm going to skip some of the questions that I would go over to have you kind of make sure you're understanding your situation, because there's a few other things I want to get to. So I had already mentioned some questions, you know, your filing status, your dependents, education. Make sure if you bought or sold something during the year that you have the tax reporting documents to go with that. You know, are you doing retirement account contributions? Did you refinance? Make sure you're gathering that information if available. Did you have some savings bonds? Did you cash savings bonds? Let's see what else. Did you do estimated tax payments? Did you receive any notices? So lots of different things around that. But what I want to make sure I get to as well are some of these tax tips that I want to alert people to, because we're still really early in the year. And I just mentioned the education credits. And let me touch on that. If you're someone who has a 529 plan, and remember I told you you have to coordinate these benefits, let's pretend the tuition and the room and board are $20,000. And you say, I have this 529 plan, and I'm going to take the $20,000 out of the 529 plan. Well, I just took $20,000 out of my 529. I have $20,000 of room and board. That zeroes out. I've used that benefit. I don't have any expenses, qualified education expenses left for the American Opportunity Credit. So one of the things you want to make sure, if you would be someone who would otherwise be eligible for American Opportunity Credit or a tuition and fees deduction or a lifetime learning credit, you want to make sure that you're paying out of pocket at least enough money to qualify for that credit. So in my example, let's pretend I had $20,000 of room and board and tuition. I'm going to say I'll take $15,000 or $16,000 out of my 529 to pay the room and board and the tuition, and I'm going to pay $4,000 out of pocket. And you say, Lori, that's crazy. Why would I do that? I have the 529 money. Well, if I use some of the money out of pocket and I have $4,000 that I paid out of pocket that would be make me eligible for my American Opportunity Credit, I could get a $2,500 refund, you know, assuming I have met all the limitations and income, et cetera, and qualified education expenses. If I get a $2,500 refund, I put $4,000 out of pocket. In essence, I only netted $1,500 out of pocket. The IRS just paid me $2,500 for that American Opportunity Credit. So what I can do now is I have that much more money available for the next year to use toward my child's education. And if I end up not using it all for my child's education, I can name a new beneficiary on that 529 account. Maybe it's the next child. Maybe it's a niece, nephew. Maybe it's myself. So keep that in mind. You want to make sure that you're taking advantage of credits if your income allows you or makes you eligible for those. So that's a tip keep that in mind for 2014 if you didn't do it in 2013. And the American Opportunity Credit is set to expire in 2016. I think that'll be the last year to do it unless they extend it. I want to mention qualified charitable distribution. Qualified charitable distribution is for those folks who are 70 and a half or older and who are required to take a required minimum distribution out of their IRA. The IRS has, we have flip-flopped year to year. It's changed where the IRS says, folks, if you are 70 and a half or older and you have a charity you like and you want to take out of your IRA money and give it directly to the charity, you won't have to report that income, that distribution, as income on your tax return. So let's say my required minimum distribution is $10,000 and I have a church I like, a charity I like, and I want to give them $6,000. Rather than taking $6,000 out of my bank account, I could take $6,000 out of my IRA. My required minimum distribution was 10, remember? So I say, hey, custodian, write a check to my charity for $6,000. And then I'm only going to have to report 4 for income taxes. That's really nice because maybe I don't itemize. I'm older now. I don't itemize. It's great. You don't have to report that income on your return. We had that in 2013. Right now, we do not have that in 2014. But you know what? They change their mind all the time, and they may bring that back by the end of the year. Who knows? So if you're someone who is 70 and a half or older, I would suggest if you don't need the money for cash flow, and this is something that would apply to you, that you are charitable, you like to give to charity, etc., you might want to postpone taking your required minimum distribution until the end of the year, because if they bring this qualified charitable distribution back, and that would be something you could take advantage of, you might want to wait and take that money out of your IRA instead of out of your bank account because you're going to save income tax that way, especially if you are someone who doesn't itemize and you don't get a deduction for that anyway. You can't double dip. You can't not report the income and take it on Schedule A if you itemize. So you're not going to report it on page one, and you're not going to report it as a charitable deduction either. So keep it in mind, just an idea. For folks who have home offices, maybe you have a business, you're self-employed, you have a home office, there is something in 2013 that you can use called the Simplified Home Office Deduction. You're not having to keep track of all your utilities and your depreciation and your mortgage and your real estate taxes. The IRS is saying they're going to give you a simplified method. You can take $5 per square foot up to 300 square feet for a total deduction of $1,500 for if you have an office of 300 square feet. And you don't have to keep track of all those other little things, you know, all the little utilities and all that. And guess what? You still get to take the deduction for mortgage interest and real estate taxes on your Schedule A if you itemize. So that's something to be aware of for 2013. There's some other nuances to that, but just be alert to it. And if you need more information, we could talk about that on another show. IRAs, folks, if you file your tax return for 2013 and you look at it and you say, gosh, Lori, I have some extra money here. I don't really need it. And I don't have a retirement account, or maybe I haven't put any money in a retirement account. There might be a chance that you could start your retirement account. You could do a traditional IRA, which would give you a deduction on your 2013 return. You're saying, Lori, it's 2014. How can I do that? You have up until April 15th of 2014 to put money into a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA for 2013. You just have to, you know, open the account or fund the account if you already have one, and let the custodian know by virtue of writing it like on your check memo that this is a contribution for 2013. If it's a traditional IRA contribution and your income is below a certain threshold and, you know, maybe you're not a participant in a retirement plan, you still have to follow some other rules. But if you qualify for the deduction, you could take a traditional IRA deduction on page one, assuming you meet all the other rules. And same thing with, you could do a Roth IRA by April 15th of 2014, call it a 2013 Roth IRA, and that has also income limitations. You don't get a deduction for that one, But when you eventually take out a qualified distribution out of the Roth, it's not going to be income taxable to you. The traditional IRA would be taxable to you. So how do you differentiate? Kind of like a little rule of thumb is if you think you're going to be in a high tax bracket today and a low tax bracket when you retire, that traditional IRA looks pretty good because you're going to get a deduction today. If you're in a really low tax bracket today, and a lot of times I see kids coming out of college, they're getting their first job, they're not making tons of money. A Roth is a great thing because someday in the future you hope to make a lot more money and be in a higher tax bracket. You can start these Roths, which will be tax-free when you eventually take out qualified distributions. So there is some planning there. For folks who don't make significant amounts of money but still want to save, there is something called the Retirement Savers Credit that if you put money into a retirement account, whether it's a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, you want to make sure if you're in kind of lower tax brackets that you may qualify for the Retirement Savers Credit. There's age limits on that too. They understand young people don't make that much money, so they're not going to let them be eligible for it. I think the age is 24. So just be alert to the Savers Credit. We can talk about that on another show at some other time as well. Another opportunity is hopscotching deductions. And that way you can review whether you should itemize or not. Hopscotching deductions are things like your medical expenses. So you can kind of, put them all in one year. The big, root canals, crowns, eyeglasses, extra medical expenses that might be optional that you could kind of push to one year or the other. If you kind of do it all in one year, that might increase your chances of being able to itemize. Schedule A in 2013 has raised the threshold on medical expenses. It's 10% for folks who are under age 65. It's 10% of your adjusted gross income. And it's still 7.5% for folks who are 65 or over. So be aware of that. Now, real quick, let's say now, Lori, we're ready. We got everything organized. We listened to the show. We talked about the deductions. We talked about the tax reporting documents. How are you preparing your tax return? There's a number of ways. You can do it on paper still, although the IRS doesn't like that, and they want to get like 80% of the people filing electronically. Well, you're not going to do that if you're doing paper. There's free filing on IRS.gov, but there's income limitation. So I think it was like 50, I printed that out. I think it's like $58,000 or less. You may be able to file free on the IRS for federal and state. That's free file. And then there's also another method on the IRS website where they're working with other custodians where it's not, I think it might be free filing for federal, but not for the state if you're over $58,000. There are some forms that aren't available through that site. And you might have to kind of be a little bit extra savvy to make sure you're doing everything right when you're doing it on your own. No one's going to help you necessarily. But that's an option. You can buy software in stores. There's some software providers that are out there. Some people do very well with that. You also just kind of have to be a little bit diligent and be careful as you're clicking through the page as it leads you through. I've known people who take double deductions because they just kind of follow along and don't realize if you added a number one place, you don't add the number somewhere else. Or you could hire a tax preparer to help you with your return as well. Some of the issues you have with paper is there's likelihood for more mistakes. Maybe there's more delays. It takes longer for the IRS to process paper tax returns. The IRS.gov, that's the free filing. There's the income limit, so that might throw you out. Or, you don't get that state return with it. That might make it not as convenient if you're having to go to a number of places to kind of get your whole filing done. Software providers, you have the cost of the software, and it may or may not be efficient for some people, kind of overwhelm some people. And a preparer, of course, you're paying for a preparer, and you want to look to see if you're paying for their time or if you're paying for the forms, and then kind of understand where you lie in those two scenarios. You can also check online for your refund status once you file your return within 24 hours if you've done it electronically. Go online to the irs.gov, and check check on your refund status. You have to have your Social Security number and the amount of your refund, maybe your filing status, I don't remember, and you can check. So there you go, in a nutshell, tax season, and we'll have future shows about that as well. Next week, I'm going to be joined by attorney Kirby Upright from King, Spry, Herman, and Freund and Fall, and we're going to discuss planning for same-sex couples, much of which applies to heterosexual couples as well, but in particular, some of the legal considerations that folks in Pennsylvania would have. I want to thank Jeff for being here, Judy Ann for being here. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.